Welcome to Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use, where ancient truth meets modern chaos, and we help you walk one faithful step at a time. I'm Levi, joined, as always, by brilliantly grounded Lisa and gloriously unpredictable Travis.
That was so polite. I think I'm suspicious.
I'm just wondering if gloriously unpredictable is biblical or just a nice way of saying, like, shut your mouth, dude.
Maybe you hit that one on the head. I don't know. Have you ever felt like your season was over? Like you were too tired, too broken, or too late, and then God whispered, you're not done yet.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there.
What about you, Travis?
Yeah. I'm thinking back to like the time where I kind of battled against God of getting into ministry, specifically seminary. And I was like, I'm too far out of school. I'm too established in life with a family, and God was like, but no, I'm not gonna let you quit yet.
Well, today we're going to be diving into a final chapter of a guy by the name of Samuel and his life. And his life has been one of faithfulness. And it just seems like he was worn out, sometimes heartbroken. And it was like, it felt like he already crossed the finish line and he anointed this king by the name of Saul. And now God's like, not done with you yet.
Yeah, because Saul turned out to be a creeper.
He was. And so if we look at 1 Samuel chapter 16, Samuel's like super old at this point, and he's grieving. Saul, the king he anointed, turned out to be a royal disaster. And Samuel's mourning him like a death in the family. And the passage says this, the Lord said to Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way.
Yeah, suck it up, buttercup. I mean, I do actually love it that God, he doesn't scold Samuel for grieving, but he also doesn't let him stay stuck there either.
And God's kind of just like, hey, you can cry, buddy, but you're packing your bags, you're getting on with it.
Do you think that, like, people, that's actually maybe an issue with people, like they just get stuck in the grief of life? Maybe it's a loss. It doesn't have to be a loss of a person, but it could be a loss of something, and they just kind of get stuck there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this happens routinely as well, just to me. I'm often, you know, in my feelings, and I think I can get in seasons where my perception of what's going on and the overwhelming whatever circumstances actually are the place that I stay, even though I don't need to. And so sometimes like a vacation or just a break from just walking away nudges me out of the patterns of thinking that can be like a rut, yeah, where I want to give up.
I think one of the things that I see and have heard, you know, I've been doing this quite a long time, like older people will get to the end of their, they're closer to the end than they are to the beginning of their life. We'll just say it that way.
Like, and you compared to me and
yes,
Travis?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm the pillar of health, so I probably will outlive you both. I was thinking about, like, I will hear things like, well, I've done that for a long time. I'm done. Let the young people do it. And that, for some reason, never sits well with me. It feels like I'm not sure that that is how God operates. And it's almost like in this passage with Samuel, he's like, dude, you're not dead. And so you're not done. And I think that there's something about that, that you're not done.
You don't get to decide that.
Right. You just don't get, like, yeah. you, and he doesn't get to decide, like, okay, that I'm done. Like, I'm mourning. I'm sad. I get to sit in my feelings. I don't get to do that. You know, you get your horn, put some oil in it. And you know, the horn in the Bible is kind of an interesting thing because they didn't have Tupperware. It's like their Tupperware. And so they put this oil in there because he's going to go in and anoint another king. He's going to pour this oil over him. And the horn is the Tupperware of the scripture.
The thermoflask.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just see, if you zoom out, and he does it, he goes, and he's going to the city of Bethlehem to find a guy by the name of Jesse. And so his sons all come in front of him. And you just see Samuel's life. It wasn't about these big moments, like anointing kings. It was decades and decades of faithfulness. And often it was like through like obscurity, repetition, and hard leadership calls. In the first or the second chapter of 1 Samuel, it says he grew in favor with the Lord and with the people. And it was talking about Samuel, and he was a little kid at the time. He was like, maybe 10, 12, 13 at that point. And that's what it said about him, that he just kept doing it. And it was a corrupt, very corrupt time. And the priest that he was under was a corrupt dude.
Well, yeah, I really like that verse because it's not like when Samuel shows up at the temple with his mom, it's not like everybody looks at Samuel and thinks, oh, there's the next leader. You know, but I also like that because it's a strange indication of what's going to happen. Even in the passage that we're talking about today, when Samuel arrives and he anoints the dude who he's going to anoint, there's no outward evidence that the king he's going to anoint, the little dude, is going to be used by God in that way. And Samuel just keeps on being faithful, just walking every next right step. I think that's harder than Saul. I don't know if you think about Saul, he was given this like, okay, you're the king and you're taller than everybody and you're amazing and beautiful and all the things. But he turned out to be, like you just said, a royal disaster because he did not do the next right step. And I don't know. I think that's interesting.
And just Samuel's history, where his mom made the promise about him and she's going to devote him to the temple and let him do that at such a young age. I would have had a big head on my shoulders at age 10, I'm something, I'm important here. And she probably should have named him Steady Eddie, because he just kept walking in obedience over and over.
Yeah, no big flash, just faithful. And that's throughout his whole life. There's a season where you see him. It says he literally traveled the same circuit to Bethel, to Gilgal, to Mitzvah, to Ramah. That's for Samuel 7 and 15 through 17. It says that he just went on the circuit over and over and over and over again and did the same thing.
Yeah, it's like the ancient version of wake up, feed the kids, repeat, but I guess different.
If you had to do something over and over again, let's say laundry or something like that, just over and over and over again for just that was your day. That's you're just doing laundry. How would that affect you?
Yeah, I would have a really hard time with a task that I had to do the same every single day over and over again.
I'd have to make a game out of it, something to challenge myself to make it interesting, because I'm thinking back to high school job of having to be the cart getter at the grocery store, and you'd go out and collect all the cart. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And that was my job because I was the young kid, and I was like, all right, I'm going to make a little race course, and I'd go around of where I was going to get the carts from, or see how many I could push back at one time, because it was so boring.
Lisa, would you have been just standing by the carts going, yeah, you don't really need that?
I actually had that same job.
Did you?
In high school, I was a cart getter at Albertson's grocery store. Yeah, I got it was hot. It was a hot job.
Oh, yeah.
In Arizona.
Well, not as carts much are for so me. Hot.
Yeah. Well, he did that for years and years and years and years and years, decades. He was just faithful, judging people. He was a judge, but he was also just training them in the ways of God, trying to help Israel come back to the ways of God, to get rid of all of their idols and to walk in the ways of God. And he did this over and over again, just faithful repetition. Though I think sometimes we think repetition as failure or not moving quick enough, and the Bible describes it something different. And it describes it as something that should be a part. It's not just the new and the now as our culture says, but the Bible says in Galatians 6:9, it says, "Let us not grow weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up."
Yeah, that's our reminder. You don't actually need to reinvent the wheel. It's not about new and now. You just need to keep rolling.
Tired, even when it feels like it's just not working.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the lessons from Samuel's life that we can really glean, is the road to having a legacy is paved with repetition. It's faithfulness, is showing up, doing the next right thing over and over, even when it's not exciting. It's just doing the next right thing. It's just doing it again and again. And one of the things that you see is Samuel goes, and he goes to Jesse's place in Bethlehem, and Jesse brings out his sons, and he brings out seven of them. And the first one, his name is Eliab, I think. And it says that the scriptures say that he is tall, he's impressive, he's the firstborn. And when Samuel sees him, he goes, "Oh, there's the guy. There's the guy." And, but God kind of like checks him in this moment. And he says to Samuel, he's like, no, that's not the guy. "Do not consider his appearance or his height. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart."
Yeah, God doesn't look at the same things that we do when we're making our choices. Right? He anoints based on character. He anoints based on the heart.
Mm-hmm. And there's like the kids out with the sheep, David, right? And his brothers are all going through the line. So it wasn't like there was a platform or anything for him to like, "Here's my resume. Here, look at how good I am." And we're going to hear in the story here that like David is not like his older brothers. He's the pipsqueak of the family, kind of. And
yeah, so what happens is they go through all the brothers, and it's like, nope, 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 nope. And it's almost like if you read the text in chapter 16, it's almost like Samuel's like, did I like mess something up? Did I not hear correctly from the Lord? Like, what's going on? And so he asks Jesse a question. He's like, "You got any more kids?" And that's a Levi paraphrase. It's not exactly like that. But he's like, "Is there any more?" And he's like, "Well, we got this one out there. He's tending to the sheep." And they bring him in. And this is the guy. This is the guy. And the reason isn't because he's the biggest. He's probably like 13 at this time, maybe 14. He's not very old when David gets anointed as king. And yet his heart was beating with God's heart. He had a heart after God's own heart. And God, I believe, really looks. He tells us he looks at our heart. And in Proverbs 4:23, it says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it."
Yeah, I guess you can fake a smile, but you can't really fake a heart. I think that in that verse, what I really like is the word guard. Like, protect your heart. Think about your heart. Guard your heart. Watch your heart. What's in your heart? The things that are in your heart, your actions flow from that.
What do you think that means? Like, not just synonyms, but like, what are the things that we do to guard our hearts?
Well, I mean, I think in Corinthians it is where Paul says to take every thought captive. And I think that that's actually part of what it means to guard our hearts. So the motives that we have, that the reasons that we do the things that we do, to actually be reflective about them and think about them. And as we protect what goes into our mind, we can then have a better sense of why and what the things are coming out of our heart. Mm-hmm.
Samuel obeys, and he anoints David, and he takes out his horn of oil and pours it on his head. And that one simple act launches a king, a kingdom, and eventually the lineage of Jesus. Like, he's going to be the guy that Jesus' line comes from, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the one who went to the cross for each one of us, the one who died for us and now is seated at the right hand in heaven. Like, it comes from this young boy and his lineage. And so in 1 Samuel 6:13, it says, "So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David."
Man, I love that, because it's like you never know what that next right step is going to unleash, where that legacy is going to go when it's connected with faithful obedience to the Lord.
No, yeah, and it wasn't really glamorous. It wasn't glamorous for Samuel to anoint a child. And he didn't get a parade. He just obeyed, and just one more time being faithful.
Well, yeah, and that kid is going to be the one who stands up against Goliath. He's the one who is, you know, is killing lions and doing all of his other things. He's the one who's going to lead the nation of Israel in a really great way to a place where their hearts are turned toward God. And he's also going to have a son that's going to take over from him, who is, you know, write a bunch of proverbs and a bunch of wise sayings and a bunch of understandings about who God is. And that all comes from, you know, Samuel being faithful, Samuel doing what God said. And then it just, God knew the heart of David that he would beat with his heart. And later in 1 Samuel 25:1, because after that, you kind of, Samuel just in the Bible, it just, he kind of fades away. He kind of goes back. He goes back to Ramah and his home. And in 1 Samuel 25:1, what we read is this: "Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him." That's just not mourning a man. That's mourning the absence of his faithfulness. It's his legacy that they were mourning.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they're mourning the absence of his legacy?
I think that there's multiple reasons, but I think that he grew in favor. Like, you see that right from a young age. And there's another place where it says that he asked the nation, he says, like, "Have I ever accepted a bribe from you guys? Like, I've done this over and over and over again." And you have to think, like, some of the cases that went before him, he's like, "You guys are knuckleheads."
Well, yeah, I was just thinking of the circuit that he made and why it was such a, you know, all of the other the other judges and prophets and that we hear about, they kind of stay central to one location. But Samuel moves around from city to city, you know, all those four back. He makes the circuit. And I just, not only was his, were his actions demonstrative of his faithfulness, but just, but also his, the very way that he carried out what God had called him to do was a legacy. And I think that's where the kind of life that is worth living anyways, the kind of legacy that finishing well includes faithfulness to the end, even in the boring and unexciting.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because, like, it was a popularity thing for him. He was just that consistent, present person in their life, doing the right thing, taking the next right step with the Lord, just faithful.
Well, they were looking for spiritual leadership. They were looking for, like, hey, how do we understand who God is? And he was just faithful over and over again to not only to bring justice, but also to bring like the voice of God to the people. Like, he did that over and over and over again, trying to guide their hearts. He was for them and not against them. And I think that's one of the things that if you're going to build a legacy, there is a faithfulness. But people, like, if it's your kids, they're going to have to sense that you are really for them and that you're really there for them. And I think that's one of the things that we see in Samuel's life, is he was there for the people of Israel. He was there for those moments of justice. He was there for those moments of helping them to turn toward God. He was there for those moments of just, like, okay, he's like a, you know, he's like a fine watch. He's going to be here on Thursday. We're going to solve this issue because he's going to judge fairly. And he's not going to take bribes. I don't have to worry about that. And now he's gone, and that there's a void there. And I think that if there's going to be a void when you're gone, you have to live a life that is worth being missed. And I think he lived a life that was worth being missed. You know, one of the things that I think about as I, you know, I am probably closer to the end than you two, but not by much. But I am closer to the end than I am. We're all closer to the end than we are to the beginning, I would guess. I might live to a hundo. But, you know, Crash Travis might not make it, you know, 88 years old and trying to ride a mountain bike down Brockway Mountain. He may not make it. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, he'll have like steel in his whole body. Be like a bionic man.
But I think about like, how does this work, this legacy thing? And it's cumulative. It's so easy, I think, to ruin the cumulative effect of integrity. I was at the store with one of my kids and the cashier actually made a mistake, and it was like it wasn't a big one. It was like $10 or something. I was like, hey, wait, like, hey, you know, you charged me incorrectly. You missed this. And as we walked out, one of my kids goes, why didn't you just take it, Dad? They wouldn't have known. And I was just like this really great moment for me as a dad to go, because my integrity and your integrity is worth more than $10. It's not worth it, dude. No, I'm not. Maybe you could interpret that there is a price to my integrity. But it was just this moment where, like, what is your integrity worth? Like, is it really worth these things? And there's this really cumulative effect of a life that is faithful. And a life that is faithful is always doing, it's really just taking the next right step. Just keep hitting that same nail over and over again, being consistent in where you live and how you live. And so one of the questions that I think we've all been wrestling with, and maybe you can wrestle with too as listeners, is what is the next right step for you? What does it look like to be somebody who is a man or a woman who is faithful in their pursuit of God? Maybe it's opening your Bible for the very first time in a while. Maybe it's just having a time of prayer. Maybe it's calling somebody that you know you've done wrong to, or and just going, man, I'm sorry. Maybe it's forgiving somebody, and that's the next right step for you. Because we all want to end, I think, with God saying that really important statement to us. Like, at the end of this life, we get to go to the next, but we get a grade on this one. And I think the hope of everyone who's following Jesus is that he would say to us, well done, good and faithful servants. And that's what we want to hear. Not well said, not well liked, not, man, you were really popular. You were the best dressed at your school. No, that's not what we want. We want, you did a great job. So we just challenge you, friends. Keep walking, keep stepping, keep showing up. I think that Jesus is still choosing hearts. He's still looking at our hearts. He's not finished with your heart.
Yeah. So we can take the step, even if it's small, right?
Yep.
Yeah, because your faithfulness today, it might just open the door to someone else's future.
That's what we saw in the story today, is Samuel's faithfulness opened the door to David's future. And so let's go. Let's take the next right step. That is good news you can use.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you've got questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. You can shoot those over to travis@evangelup.org. If you'd like to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes here on Good News You Can Use, just search Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform or check out our website, evangelup.org.